documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, wrestling old man winter and broadcasting live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks along with Vicki Davis here with you again this week on December 9th, 2017. It's good to have you with us once again. We are live, and I will try not to take up too much time here at the outset of the broadcast, filling people in on the details of what happened last week. In case you missed last week's broadcast or you happen to be kind of casually listening, we had to end the show rather abruptly because I had a family emergency. My daughter was skating on the ice at the ice arena, and she fell on the ice, and we didn't determine exactly what happened until later on. Let me back up here a little bit. My daughter's coach, little kids on figure skating. They've been figure skating since they were little. They love it. They were both members of the United States Figure Skating Association. And so they're qualified to coach up to their level, and that's kind of how this works. And anyway, my cousin Teresa had wanted one of her grandchildren to be to learn how to skate. So she was taking this child to the ice arena. And my oldest daughter, Jessica, was going to be teaching, but she got delayed for some reason. So my youngest daughter, Hannah, had stepped in. And so anyway, she was working on coaching, and had what ended up happening was that somebody, and we found out this later from the ice arena's surveillance cameras. We thought at first somebody had pushed her. And some of you in the chat room might remember me saying that in the chat room. Apparently, that did not happen. The reason we thought that is because there was a woman that approached after my daughter and my wife left in the ambulance. A woman came up to my cousin Teresa, who stayed behind at the ice arena after the whole thing happened. And she had said that there was a little boy that she overheard going around bragging about pushing Hannah. Well, the ice arena said they reviewed the footage of the security camera, and they said what looks like happened. They said they didn't see any sign of anybody pushing her. So we were glad to hear that. But apparently what had happened was that Hannah, I think, was skating backwards at the time. And so somebody had fallen right, you know, behind her as she was skating backwards. And somehow, because of that, she, you know, was unable to respond in time and toppled over them. And they said at the ice arena they went airborne. She went airborne. Well, somehow or other, she came down on her face. And her chin needed 6 stitches. Her nose was bruised. But the worst part about the whole thing was that, aside from her being knocked unconscious, thankfully she did not have another concussion. But the worst part was that she broke both of her 2 front teeth all the way through. So she's going to need implants, which are $5,000 a piece. But anyway, and she's got 2 front teeth that are broke. So other than that, thankfully she's fine, and I appreciate everybody who was praying for us. Everybody who, you know, emailed or called or put messages in the chat room. She's going to be okay. We've talked a lot about her being on the ice in the future, and she doesn't want to give it up. I guess I don't have enough gray hairs yet. But anyway, she's okay, and I appreciate everybody hanging with us and all your concerns and everything. I view our listeners as kind of our, you know, extended family in many respects. We're kind of an intimate bunch. So anyway, I appreciate all that you've you know, all the prayers and everything and well wishes. And but that's what's going on. Everything is good, I think, for now, and hopefully it stays that way. And that's the story. So anyway, continuing on, we are having a lot of snow here in southern Michigan right now. We just got dumped on starting, what was it, a couple of days ago now? And now we're supposed to get, I guess, I heard different things. The Weather Service is saying something that I heard independently. But it's very clear our, what would you call it, Indian summer that lasted until December is clearly over. The cold air has arrived, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, good morning, Vicki.
Good morning. I'm so glad your daughter's okay.
Yeah, I am too. It gave us quite a scare, and when that happened last week, I knew that, you know, you got to get there as soon as possible. So thankfully, we have automation set up to take care of situations like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought she fell in your driveway. That's...
Oh, no, no, we don't. At the time last week, it was warm here. That's why this cold weather is quite a shock, because it arrived very, very rapidly. Yeah, it was nice
well,
and warm.
Well, you know, they throw the switch and that's it. Winter's here.
Yeah, the weather modification machine. Hey, you know, that out in California, there's some weird things going on with those fires.
Very bizarre.
We didn't really talk about this when the original round happened. What was it, a month and a half ago? You know, I think it was about the time the hurricanes were hitting. And so there were so many tragedies going on that it was kind of hard to address them all. And California's wildfires kind of got pushed to the back burner. But I do have a report about the current fires.
Now to another Fox News alert for you. California under siege again. Massive wind-fueled flames sparking apocalyptic destruction, forcing more than 150,000 people to leave everything behind. Jonathan Hunt is live for us in Ventura. That's where the evacuation zone widened overnight.
No end in sight to the suffering of so many displaced residents here. No end in sight to the battles that the firefighters are having to go through. And this is what a lot of residents are going to be returning to in the city of Ventura. You can see here we're in the driveway of one house, pickup truck, family sedan, completely destroyed. And then you come up here, the garage door is right in front of us. And then behind that, the image of complete and utter destruction. And the thing we see so often in these fires, the only part of the house left standing, the chimney stack. Now, these fires have so far scorched some 55,000 acres across this area. This is the Thomas Fire, Ventura, about 60 miles north of Los Angeles. The fires burning so fiercely, blown by fierce Santa Ana winds, which are those hot, warm winds. They're usually not as destructive in December because we've usually had some rain by now. Not the case this season, and that's why they're causing so much destruction. NASA has released some extraordinary images of the smoke from the fires blowing across Southern California now. And as I say, it's not just here in Ventura. In Sunland and Sylmar, which is north of Los Angeles, the fire there has scorched some 11,000 acres, 30 structures, including homes, destroyed there. Also, it has been a big problem for a lot of livestock that are there. We have seen some heartbreaking images of horses fleeing through the smoke-filled streets of that area. Some of those horses have been killed. The good news, no fatalities so far among residents in any of these fires.
And I don't know if that holds true. That report is some hours old. But that's the situation in California right now. Now, Nancy Levant had sent me a video and kept insisting that I watch this. I wanted to play a soundbite from the video. This is John Lord. He's a fire captain. Just a little background on him. In the form of credentials. He was a paramedic for 40 years, former Navy. He has been fighting fires for 28 years. He has an associate degree in fire technology. He's involved in fire, teaching fire officials or other firefighters. He's done this for over 25 years and helped develop a course even on fire safety, which was adopted by the state and is now standard practice for fire safety. He's also received numerous awards for his work, and he had some interesting things to say about this last round of fires, which hit, the last round of fires, because it was the first round that hit right around the time the hurricanes were going on, which was, I think, a month and a half ago. Anyway, that hit, it wreaked havoc upon Texas and Florida, and many people were talking about how these fires would burn off everything on one side of the road and completely leave things untouched on the other side, or it would, in some cases, hop like 8 lanes of a road to destroy a major shopping center. In some cases, there were cars that were burned through the roof. There were holes burned through the roof that and through the engine block. I mean, crazy things that you wouldn't expect an ordinary fire to do. So this is this guy's opinion about what these fires. He says he's never seen anything like it, and that's why I read his credentials, because I wanted to make sure that we got that out there. This isn't just some Joe Schmo off the street. This is a guy who's been in the business of fighting fires for many years, and he says he hasn't seen anything like it.
The first thing that I noticed, I think, was the rapidity of the fire movement, which seemed abnormally fast to me, considering that there was no weather fronts or winds or anything that I was aware of that would have driven the fires that quickly. And also the number of fires was extremely alarming. Where did all these fires come from? Mm-hmm. How did they all start at once? And so I started digging, and when I started digging, I started looking at the research that was available for directed energy weapons, and what I started reading actual government documents that people had put up, various people had put up on the website, and looking at the destruction, which I have never seen in my career, the totality of the destruction on the structures. There was absolutely nothing left of the structures except foundation. Now, I've seen that with other fires, but not where it moves like that. Not where the fire is moving and one side of the street everything's fine, the other side of the street it looks like a nuclear war zone. Never seen anything like that.
What other options could there be besides a high torch directed energy weapon that you could consider as a possibility in your experiences of all the firefighting you've done?
There's none that I could think of. There's none.
So this is the only plausible explanation that's being presented.
It's the only plausible explanation, in my opinion. That's the conclusion that I was brought to based on my almost 30 years of experience.
And you know that steel melts in thousands of degrees and yes. All this, and to see steel bent like that but have vegetation and plant life and eucalyptus trees.
The holes that were burned through the hoods of cars all the way through the engine block are a little bit suspicious.
Wasn't that crazy?
Yeah.
The aluminum on the ground that had melted to the ground where the guy
that
was walking over it? Okay.
That I've seen before. We had a tanker fire, a gasoline tanker fire on 101, and the gasoline fuel is moved around in aluminum tanks like that, thick aluminum tanks. And that one caught on fire and melted the aluminum like that.
Right.
So I have seen aluminum melt like that in a structure fire or other fire.
Let's talk for a sec about how a firestorm creates. And it's my understanding that a fire has to build its fuel and consume its oxygen to intensify over time as heat builds up over time. But we're having this firestorm. These fires happen in a matter of a couple hours and created thousands of degrees temperature without any provocation from fuel to build itself. It just happened, it seems like. Did you hear anything about blue lights being seen and
yes.
Anybody saying that?
I saw the photographic evidence on the internet.
Did you see, I heard of anybody else commenting that they've seen blue lights, like they've been commenting on my site that I saw blue flashes. I saw it, and other people have been saying it as well.
Yeah, just some in passing, but I saw actual photographs that people took from their cell phones, their cameras.
All right, and then how do you feel about learning that the planning and Zoning Commission is having the exact same footprints nearly as these fires were, and that now they're declaring some of these areas from a previous fire that could be deemed a fire, a severe zone, that maybe they shouldn't be rebuilt now. Have you any comment on that?
Well, I guess my comment would be that I'm fully aware of Agenda 21 and that it doesn't surprise me one bit.
All right. So that's it.
Wow. Oh, my God. That's huge.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't give it a whole lot of weight if it didn't come from somebody with those credentials. And I do have a document that kind of proves his involvement in at least some of that stuff. I mean, there's city council meeting minutes or something like that they provided just to provide, you know, just to prove that he is very much involved in that field,
mm-hmm.
in that arena.
Well, from what he was saying, it kind of reminded me, you know, way back when people were researching 9/11, and there was one woman named Judy Woods who was talking about directed energy weapons.
It's Judy Wood, actually.
Judy Wood.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, I didn't give it much credibility.
Yeah,
I
didn't either. The problem with Judy Wood, mm-hmm. I'm sure she's a nice lady. The way she explains
things. I'm not sure about
that. Well, I don't know her. I don't know her. But anyway, the problem is that the way she explains things, I never could wrap my brain around exactly what she was saying. You know, and so if I can't understand it, then I'm not going to be very likely to. I don't know. I just never really could understand. She was very technical.
Well, and the people surrounding her were so
They were so what? You cut out.
Viciously supportive of her.
Yeah.
If you even asked questions about her theory, they would come after you like you were the enemy or something, you know.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not for rock stars.
You couldn't even challenge her on anything.
Yeah, I'm not for rock stars. I mean, the thing is that we have to look at the if we're really genuinely searching for truth, and I'm not speaking against or for anyone here. I'm just making a general broad statement. Then we have to be able to look at things objectively and ask questions. And if somebody's got a theory, that's fine. But if you can't challenge that theory with other counterarguments and stuff, this is why scientific papers are written, by the way. Peer-reviewed scientific papers are written so that other scientists can tear apart what one particular scientist is having a thesis about. It's through that process of debate that you decipher the truth. And that's why this global warming stuff it should be, for anybody who has any sense, you should at least be asking some serious questions about it, because they're trying to shut down the debate every step of the way. They don't want any kind of real scientific debate. And anytime they try to stifle any kind of counter-argument, you got to ask yourself some serious questions about it.
Well, if global warming, if they are using weapons like directed energy weapons to create warming, then you wouldn't really want any questions on environmental causes.
Mm-hmm.
Because there isn't any environmental causes. If it's a man-made thing using a new type of weapon.
Right. Exactly. So, anyway, that's the story there. Now, I also got from one of our listeners new cars to be equipped with complimentary TSA pre-checked biometric scanners. Complimentary biometric scanners, Vicki.
Oh, wow. Gee, thanks a lot, huh?
Yeah, Mass Private says, I cannot believe what I'm writing. The TSA has officially invaded auto manufacturing. Now, folks, here's the thing. We predicted this was coming. I predicted several years ago when the TSA started doing all this stuff at the airport. that all of this Homeland Security stuff was coming to the automobiles.
Well, let's back up here and get back to when it really started. It started in 1991 with the
new rotation. It was our government
that funded research institutes. There were five of them initially. Mm-hmm. That our government funded the research institutes to develop this technology.
Yeah, back up and say it started when, in 1991, with the...
1991, with the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act.
Okay, that's a mouthful.
And you can go read that legislation, and you'll see in there that five research institutes were funded initially for the development of new technologies for transportation.
Yeah, and they say here, according to the Lincoln Motor Company media release, their 2018 Lincolns will offer complimentary, clear biometric memberships to new car owners. So they're complimentary offering you this biometric ID. Working with Clear, Lincoln takes effortless travel to the next level, Vicki, offering complimentary memberships for new Lincoln owners. Lincoln owners and their passengers wishing to travel to the airport or sports arenas will have their complimentary pleasure of being spied on by the Department of Homeland Security. Now, just a little background on Clear. Clear is providing, this is a company evidently that's providing a lot of security, biometric security for sports arenas and things like that. Here's one of their promotional videos.
There's nothing quite like being at the game. The energy, the excitement, that moment. What if getting here could be easier? What if rather than going through all this...
Okay, now when they say going through all this, they show somebody being swabbed or, wanded. You know, the wands that they wave across you to try to detect anything, any contraband. Yeah, they're waving people with a wand.
You can just do this.
Okay, you can instead of doing this, the wand thing, you can just do this. And it shows somebody putting their finger on a biometric reading machine.
Clear Fast Access offers premium entry at serious speed with the simple touch of your finger, offering the fastest way to your seat.
There's a way you can avoid long security lines.
Using the same pre-screening security system called Clear, used at airports.
Clear is a natural progression for the marketplace.
Ballpark is all about baseball, but getting there's half the problem, you know?
Being in lines might kind of kill the vibes.
Faster, better, more baseball.
Finally, you can avoid the wait time and just enjoy game time.
Finally, Vicki. Finally, we can do this.
Yeah. And in just a few years, it'll just be a chip. You won't even have to put your finger on anything. You'll just be able to wave your arm. Yeah. And doors will open for you.
Yeah.
It'll be so magic.
Doors will open for you and other doors will close for you.
Yeah.
The ones that close won't be visible ones, though. But they'll be the most important ones. But anyway, this is the technology. Evidently, they're going to start working into Lincoln Continentals now.
Yeah, great.
So I could see them
paying for their own virtual
demise.
Prison.
Exactly. And that's the way it always seems to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, in the brave new world that's being built, it's all technology, it's all about the systems, and it's all about the imprisonment of humanity.
Yeah.
Now, maybe your cage might be a little more comfortable than somebody else's, but it's still a cage.
Yeah, and so. You would think that people with money would realize this, but I think a lot of the people are embracing this stuff. If you know, I don't know. People with Lincoln who buy Lincoln Continentals are people who are arguably pretty comfortable. Maybe not necessarily wealthy, although they could be, but comfortable nonetheless. And I would think that they're people who have something to lose. And
well,
nothing's really more
though,
dangerous than somebody that has something to lose.
The development of technology, even that going back through the history of the world, the development and the availability of technology has always been a status symbol. And if you were raised with the status of having increasingly bigger and better technology, then, are they really thinking about how they are going to be imprisoning themselves and their future generations? See, that's the thing. Are they looking at it as a status symbol, or has it crossed their mind that it's not a status symbol, it is a symbol of imprisonment. It's going to imprison them the same way that it imprisons us. It imprisons everybody. Technology is bank account neutral.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, in the case of what one of Trump's Federal Reserve picks wants to do, it's really going to be account neutral, because his latest Federal Reserve pick wants to eliminate cash altogether. He's in favor of negative interest rates, forcing people to spend their money, and he says the only way to effectively do that is by eliminating cash. So,
you know what? The fallacy in that
we got to take the bottom of the hour break. Hang on. We'll be back.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
With Government America News this hour, I'm Darren Weeks, a professor turned communist theoretician who has been a major advisor to 3 communist Chinese leaders, has finally stepped out of the shadows on Sunday. Wang Huning is known as the brain behind communist Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Wang has made his first major speech since joining the Politburo Standing Committee, the 7-member organization that rules China, at a conference created to show off the country's technological strengths to the world. Well known for his cold support of authoritarianism, Wang has called for tight control of the internet, including censorship. China, of course, well known for its own internal internet censorship within its own borders. Chinese and Russian artificial intelligence are set to leave U.S. systems in the dust. Kerry Bingen, Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, warned that the two powers were making huge advances in their technology and were advancing on the United States. The findings came in the form of an earth-shattering report that claimed that the U.S. is rapidly falling behind its rivals and must now decide if it wants to lead the coming revolution or fall victim to it. Documents from the Defense Advanced Projects Research Agency, or DARPA, suggest that it is becoming the world's largest funder of gene drive research and is raising tensions with the United Nations. DARPA is investing $100 million in genetic extinction technologies that could wipe out malarial mosquitoes, invasive rodents, and other species, emails released under the Freedom of Information Act show. The UN Convention on Biological Diversity is debating whether to impose a moratorium on gene research next year, and several southern countries fear a possible military application. The UN worries that cutting-edge gene editing tools that cut into DNA strands and tear them apart, alter, or remove targeted traits could wipe out mosquitoes and subsequently malaria populations, but could have unintended consequences. That's Government America News this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
One of the most popular movies during the Christmas season is the old favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the story of George Bailey, a compassionate but dejected businessman who is ready to give up on life when his guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes. Clarence shows him life as if George had never been born, and George discovers that for all his supposed mistakes and failures, he has brought joy and life to countless people. It really is a wonderful life, and not just on TV. Each and every person has so much potential for good, and nowhere is this potential greater than with an unborn child. This Christmas and always, please work to preserve the wonder of life for the unborn and their mothers. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org. That's nrlc.org.
We're back. This is Govern America. The website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address, radio@governamerica.com. Vicki, you want to give your information out?
I have two websites. My older one that has a lot of research is channelingreality.com. That's channelingreality.com. And my newer one is called The Technocratic Tyranny.
All right.
.com.
And if you want to call in, I was gonna take a call, but then the call dropped, so I guess we won't take a call. 844-646-8376 is the toll-free number if you want to call in, 844-6-GOVERN. Getting back to this, I had to cut you off before the break. I was just talking about, the guy's name is Marvin Goodfriend, and he's no good friend to anybody who cares about national sovereignty, I'll tell you that. I found a location or a talk that he gave back in 2009, and it's very apparent this guy's a huge globalist, and this is a guy that Trump just nominated for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board of Directors. So anyway, I think you were going to say something going into the break, Vicki. You remember what that was? Because what I was talking about is his desire to eliminate cash, his desire ultimately to...
Oh, yeah, no, savings, the negative interest rate and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've listened to so many hearings where Congress talks about the American people not being savers. Mm-hmm. Because for a long time, you know, there really has been no incentive to keep money in the bank. The incentive is just the opposite, to create, to use whatever money you have to buy assets through debt.
Yeah. Well, the idea is that the Federal Reserve is stealing our money. So if you put your money in your mattress or even in the bank account, which doesn't pay very much interest at all, you're really losing money, because the money is being devalued constantly to the point where, I mean, the CPI and all the prices of everything appear to be going up. In reality, we know that it's just the value of the money going down. You don't have as much purchasing power, and so it is a form of theft. And that's what people around the world are realizing as well, because they've bought into this whole Bretton Woods thing to the point where, I mean, literally, you have this U.S. central bank stealing from people worldwide. So it doesn't pay to save money. And I think that's probably a major reason why many people don't. And, you know, you have a lot of struggling people out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I've been working on for the last week, I can be summed up by saying that what we're living through is the rise of the socialist international. Mm-hmm. And global governance has been their objective, and I can show the timeline. If you go back to Willy Brandt, when Willy Brandt was mayor of Berlin, and follow his history. That is the history of the rise of the Socialist International. And it culminated with, once the Berlin Wall came down, then Willy Brandt had a commission for global governance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow that path, I mean, you can see that this really is a, I'm just going to call it communist, because I don't think there's any difference between a communist and a socialist.
No.
But it's global communism, and rather than fighting it through a military war, they have taken over through the administrative state.
Hmm.
And what's been happening to our government is the merge into a global governing system.
Yeah.
And that's really what is at the heart of what's going on with the FBI.
Yeah, and let's get
because
to the FBI.
They've been compromised.
Because you're right. It's all political, and well, let's cover the FBI here in a moment. I wanted to play this audio here for you because this goes really to the heart of what we always talk about on this broadcast. Here you have this guy, Goodfriend is his name, back in 2009, just coming out of the 2008 near collapse of the monetary system, which, you know, it's interesting how they come up with all these solutions. And this guy, he's arguing for, oh, well, we got to make sure that we don't erect tariffs. We got to make sure that we don't do anything to protect America and protect our economy. What he leaves out, of course, is the fact that none of this would be necessary if it weren't for central banking and the fact that the globalists have gutted our economy.
One of the reasons that this contraction, while it was the worst in many decades, has not turned into the Great Depression is that we have resisted the buy domestic campaigns around the world. Let me elaborate a little bit.
Yeah.
The Great Depression of the 30s turned from a contraction into a collapse of world trade because many countries exhorted their populations to buy domestic. They either told them to do that, encouraged them by law, or put up tariffs against trade to try to keep jobs at home.
Hmm.
And of course, that was very counterproductive. If everybody does that, then trade collapses. It not only contracts, it collapses. And that's what turned a recession into a decade-long depression. This time, we've resisted that. Many of our countries, or most of our countries, have resisted the temptation that ordinarily occurs when their legislatures and their populations push for legislation or tariffs to keep demand at home. But if one country does that, all countries retaliate and trade spins out of control. We've resisted that, and the G20, I think, has played a major role. In fact, I would say the major benefit of the G20 meetings this year has been to resist from the top, the very top, all the way down, buy domestic campaigns.
Interesting. It's almost like peer pressure working at a
Absolutely.
Global leadership level.
Absolutely. And I can give you a good example of that. The cash for clunkers deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the United States resisted the temptation to put into that legislation buy America. And many Americans said, well, that's silly. What if they buy Toyotas with the cash for clunkers? True, it doesn't immediately help Americans. But the alternative would have been to say buy America, and we would have found retaliation all around the world, which would have been completely counterproductive in the end and might have caused trade, which has already contracted quite a lot, to collapse. And then we would have been looking at something much more serious.
So what do you think is going to happen with the G20 in Pittsburgh? Are they going to actually do anything here, or is the work done, or are they all just going to pat each other on the back?
I would say, hey, just keep doing what you're doing. Just recommit to not introducing buy domestic legislation so that we can resist the temptation to do that. That would be a huge, huge benefit in exiting this recession and preventing us from collapsing trade even more. I would just say keep doing that. If the G20 did nothing more than to recommit not to introduce buy domestic legislation around the world so that we would not have retaliation around the world, which would be counterproductive, if it did nothing more, it would be worthwhile.
That's and as you say, remarkable. The structure really hasn't existed until very recently. The heads of state never got together at that most senior level. It was always the finance ministers.
Absolutely. There's nothing like pressure from the top down for this key pushback against the inclination, the temptation of the domestic populations to get their governments to put up trade barriers.
Well, and it's tough. You're a democracy. And even if you aren't, I would expect if there's a hue and cry in the streets and people are upset, the political pressure at home has got to be tough. And it takes real leadership to be able to resist that.
Exactly. And I want to point out,
heaven forbid that politicians actually listen to people who they're supposed to be representing, huh?
Right. Why are those people in the streets raising hell? It's because they don't have jobs.
Exactly.
They don't have decent jobs. I mean, it's so insane how they think they can have this global system, and what they're actually doing is distributing manufacturing around the world. System of central planning the economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you've heard them talk about the manufacturing of cars in the U.S., well, 40% of the parts come from Mexico.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, so many percentage of the parts come from Canada. That's distribution of the manufacturing process. And it's so that no country can escape this socialist system of control that is being directed by the global trade agreements.
Well, one thing, too, that he said in there and is regarding the blowback from other countries, the retaliation from other countries. If we erect tariffs, they're going to retaliate. Well, maybe they will, but we've got a bigger market than many countries. And
well, the way the global economy was designed, and you played clips from this last week, and my observation is that they've gotten all of the other countries to export their production to the United States,
mm-hmm.
as the United States being the market to the world.
Exactly.
Well, that's well and good, but people in the United States have to have money to buy the goods.
Exactly.
But they've killed our job base, so there isn't the same kind of money there has been in the past to buy all of these goods that are being produced all over the world.
Yeah, so, you know, it's never admit a mistake. It's always full speed ahead.
Exactly. And I want to point out, you know, we look to be having an end to the recession, which is the contraction in aggregate demand, so to speak, the demand for goods and services. But employment will continue to contract because demand for goods and services actually has to begin to rise at the rate of productivity growth in order to bring people back to work. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a period of probably increasing unemployment in the United States and many, many other countries in the world. So we're not out of the woods in terms of pressure to buy domestic yet.
Mm.
So the G20 needs to recommit against that kind of trade tariff, trade protectionism in order to get us through the next year or so.
Wow, fascinating. I remember when you first came down here at the beginning of all of this, we were talking about is there a Great Depression on the way, another one, and that's a bullet that for the moment we've dodged.
Absolutely. I'm like a broken record here, but I have to say it's been dodged in large part because we've blocked this kind of what we call protectionist legislation around the world, which is so tempting.
Yeah, this
okay,
guy is...
I have to throw something in here really fast.
Okay.
When he talked about productivity,
mm-hmm.
he's not talking about manpower labor. That is not the kind of productivity he's talking about. He's talking about the productivity of capital. And the productivity, how much can these financial people get for their money? How many workers can you buy for your money? So when they talk about the productivity these days, don't think about labor, don't think about anything except the productivity of capital. And when I figured that out was when I realized that programmers over in India were making like $3 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Programmers here in the United States were making, you know, 40, 50, 60, you know, depending, or higher if you were a consultant. So the productivity of capital, because they could buy a lot more programmers in India than they could buy in the United States for the same amount of money.
Hmm.
So that's one
interesting
thing about these socialists is that they redefine the terms. And it, you know, and
well,
they
what,
can't...
What, it dawns on me, though, Vicky, that we're capital. At least that's what they consider us.
Well, yes.
We're human capital. They use that term.
Yes. But in actual, what they're talking about is the productivity of their capital. And if you think about it in terms of manpower and labor, then you miss the concept, because we're kind of our economy was built around industrial production. Mm-hmm. So when you say productivity, you assume, you know, how many units of work,
boy,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's not really the way that the financiers are looking at it, because a machine in China or a machine in India produces the same amount of output. So the variable is in the manual labor that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the amount of manual tasks that you have to do.
God, we're having a horrible Skype connection. Let me call you back.
Oh,
I don't know. Okay. I don't know what's going on today. Let me just go ahead and do this over. I'm sorry, folks. We're working on trying to find a viable solution to this. I don't know if it's Skype or if it's the internet connection here.
Okay, how's that?
We'll try it and see what happens. I'm going to have to download the other software. We did try one thing, and it didn't work very well. I've got another idea in mind for an alternative solution. But yeah, you've been garbled throughout the whole show, garbles and drops, and so hopefully by calling back it'll reset something. Maybe that was a bad connection.
Or maybe there are gremlins on the internet.
Well, I don't doubt that one bit. I'm sure there's plenty of gremlins, but there could be congestion somewhere too between the central server
mm-hmm.
and us. So
yeah, anyway. Okay. Well, anyway, as it pertains to intellectual property, the traditional measure of productivity.
Well, that isn't
very well. So that's why they redefined.
If this doesn't clear up, I may have to get you on the phone, because this is the worst I've seen it yet. We'll try to go with
it. That's very odd, maybe.
We'll try to go with it a little bit longer. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. So anyway, this economist Marvin Goodfriend, not to beat a dead horse here, but... This came from Bloomberg. I want to share a little bit of this and get your take on it. Marvin Goodfriend says it would be easier to impose negative interest rates if people couldn't hoard cash. It says that Marvin Goodfriend, economist Marvin Goodfriend, who, as I said, has now been given the nod by Trump to be a, you know, to sit on the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank. He doesn't like the green paper rectangles in your wallet, which are formally known as Federal Reserve notes. He says formally known. As far as I know, they're still known as that, even though it's not really a note. But anyway, his opinion matters because President Trump has nominated him to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. If confirmed by the Senate to a 14-year term, Goodfriend may take the opportunity to pursue his academic interest in abolishing or at least demoting paper money. Goodfriend's dislike for cash could become an issue in his confirmation hearings, which are not yet scheduled. Senators could soon be getting an earful from constituents who fear that taking away paper money is a step towards socialism or totalitarianism. You think? I mean, all you have to do is take a look at what's going on. And this is, I'm not reading anymore. This is what I'm saying. Take a look at what's going on with Bitcoin right now. Oh, Vicky, you talk about a pump and dump. This Bitcoin thing, I think this is mm-hmm. a scam. There are people that are trying to sell their Bitcoin that can't because the markets, the exchanges, won't let them sell. One guy demonstrated on TV that you know he's trying to demonstrate how easy it is. That's what was funny about it. I wish I could find the clip. I looked for it. But He's on TV demonstrating how easy it is to transact in Bitcoin. And he went to one of the exchanges, and he tries to go and sell some of his Bitcoin, and it says, failed. He says, well, that's odd. Well, you know, they've been having problems all day, you know, and all the people that were on the show with him said the same thing. Oh, well, they're just having some technical problems. They've been having some difficulty. High server volume. You know how it is. And so then he goes and tries, well, you know, he tries again, and this time to try to buy some. Well, they let him transact and buy. It let him buy, but it wouldn't let him sell. So I'm thinking, okay, server issues that only work on one side. What's wrong with this problem? And is this the reason why we've seen a massive spike in Bitcoin? If everybody's able to buy and hold, what if you try to sell? And anyway, server problems on exchanges are not, this is not good either. You know, even if it is just a server problem. What if you get a massive drop and you want to get out? You want a liquid. You want to get liquid. You can't get liquid. Because, oh, well, it's a server problem. Sorry, no soup for you.
This is historic. It's a run on the bits.
I'm telling you, this is weird, man. This is really weird. And some of the people, and I'm not gonna get into specifics here, because I really hate getting letters from lawyers. But I tell you what, this is not some of the unsavory characters involved with some of these exchanges are very, very well. The background of some of these people very questionable. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, Bitcoin. So, but I bring this up, though, because this is your future under the cashless society, ladies and gentlemen. If Marvin Goodfriend has his way, this could be what you're looking at. Numbers on a computer, where if you say the wrong thing, you venture into unacceptable territory, shall we say. Politically or any other way, that they don't, the stereotypical they, in quotes, don't approve of, then you might find yourself with zero bits in your account.
And no identity.
And no identity, that's right. Persona non grata.
Yeah. This is the new world order. No soup for you.
Yeah, no soup, yeah, unless you go begging on the corner.
Yep. That's the Brave New World, all right.
Indeed. And speaking of Brave New World, you know, this is something I've been holding on to for a few weeks. I wanted to get to it. Bill Gates and his new smart city. I'm sure you've probably heard of it by now.
It looks like a whole lot of nothing. An undeveloped area about 45 minutes west of downtown Phoenix off I-10 near Tonopah. But this land is now in the hands of one of the richest men on Earth.
I have a dream that every child in America will attend a great school.
One Bill Gates, and his plan is a big one. Belmont Partners, an Arizona-based real estate investment group, says a firm owned by Gates dropped a whopping $80 million to kickstart the development of a brand new community there called Belmont. The end goal? Turn this blank slate, roughly the size of Tempe, into its own smart city. Driverless cars, digital networks, data centers, you name it.
Bill Gates is known for innovation and those kind of things, and I think he picked the right location. He's coming to Arizona.
Ronald Schott of Arizona Technology Council says this spot, while remote now, is a good one, in part due to the proposed I-11 freeway, which would run right through Belmont and connect to Las Vegas.
Finally, Arizona is getting recognized for being a place for innovation.
3,800 acres will go towards office, commercial, and retail space. 470 acres for public schools, plus room for 80,000 housing units.
Their goal is to try to make this the most positive state to do business in and advocate for the technology industries.
Now, with the exception of those details I just talked about, the attorneys representing the investors are staying pretty tight-lipped. They're not commenting on when construction will start or if Microsoft will be opening an office there. Bianca Bono, 12 News.
I think this is a test city, and if it goes the way they want it to go, they're going to adopt this in every city. We're already seeing signs of it.
Yeah, as he was describing it, I was picturing a ghost city, like one they have in China, where they build the city and nobody comes.
Well, let's hope that happens.
Well, if you're in a smart city, everything is controlled. Who wants to? And there would have to be surveillance everywhere. It's probably your walls are listening to you, and you know.
Well,
creepy is that?
Never underestimate the many people who think this is cool. And probably a lot of young people, I would imagine. But if they make it affordable enough, it will draw people to at least try it out. I don't know. We're living the problem here, Vicki, is you're thinking like a sane person. And you can't think like a sane person. You got to think like somebody who goes around taking selfies all the time. Even taking nude photos of themselves and putting it up, texting it to friends and neighbors. Somebody who puts their whole life on Facebook and social media, shares every little intimate detail of everything. That's how you got to think. And somebody like that, it would be cool. It would be neat. Ooh, look at all the technology. Oh, blinking lights, blinking LEDs.
That's true. But, you know, when I talk about things like that to the people out there who really don't follow anything except the local newspaper, they think I'm crazy when I try to talk about these things. So I don't even talk about them anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Hey, we got the break. We're stepping on the break. Let me go ahead and take the break. We'll be back in a moment.
Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America. America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, this is the second hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you, as we are every Saturday. It continues to be the 9th of December 2017. As we get right back into it, talking in the last hour about Bill Gates and his smart city that he is working on building. One other thing that the New American reported is that Bill Gates and other elites were inducted evidently recently into the Communist Chinese Academy. I say Microsoft billionaire Bill Gates and nine other American quote-unquote foreign experts in engineering and technology have been elected as new members of the Chinese Academy of Engineering. This might seem a bit odd for so uber-capitalist Gates, since the CAE is the People's Republic of China's elite society of technology professionals who have proven their service to the Communist Party of China and the Communist state. But like many other super-wealthy Westerners...
Well, Bill Gates has done that. He qualifies.
Yeah. Gates has shown himself simpatico to authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. Also, David Rockefeller, George Soros, Ted Turner, Warren Buffett, and a small clutch of additional billionaires, Gates formed a cabal they dubbed the Good Club, which seems to be fixated on population control. Its members are uncomfortably comfortable with China's coercive and murderous one-child policy as an answer to population problems. Keep in mind, of course, Bill Gates, he made his famous, now infamous, speech about, here it is. Yeah.
First, we've got population. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
There you go. That's Bill Gates. Hey, there's the guy. There's the hero. Want to live in
his
city?
His father was very involved with Planned Parenthood, I understand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they're eugenicists from way back.
Yeah. So, anyway, got a lot of other news going on, but I wanted to get to some of this other stuff that some of the stuff we got cut off from last week. There's so many things that we have here that it's difficult to know which direction to go. We do have the Roy Moore, the Alabama special election for the Senate, coming up, I think, this Tuesday. And, the allegations against Roy Moore. Folks, here's the thing. I haven't said a whole lot about this because I don't know if he did it or didn't do it, but it looks like... From the very start, it looked like nothing more than a smear to me. The timing, 40 years ago, this allegedly happened. She produced documents which looked like they were forged. And she dropped them, most important of all, 1 month before the election. So, the timing of it, I'm sorry, it looks very suspicious. And then now we find out... What's that?
I said that woman admitted that she forged the information in that yearbook.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
People are
talking about Gloria Allred being disbarred. She should be.
Yeah, I agree. And some of the accusers were also, also had ties to the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton supporters. One accuser is a three-time divorcee who claims several pastors made sexual advances on her. The allegations are falling apart. It's very apparent this was nothing more than a smear. But I was one of our listeners sent us a conference call with Larry Nichols, and I think this is plausible what they're planning on doing because. To me, I don't know, it looks to me like a lot of the attacks on Roy Moore not only were coming from the left, but they were also coming from the right. I got a feeling the Republicans, there are many Republicans who do not want him in there. And what Larry Nichols says is he says that he thinks that the GOP strategy for Roy Moore is to support him so that they get him elected. And then once they get him elected, to conduct an ethics investigation and kick him out. And then that would pave the way. See, the risk is if they turn on him now, a Democrat could get elected. So if he gets in there, successfully wins the office, then they can kick him out. Then the Alabama governor could step in and pick a GOP replacement.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
I really wish that Trump.
You wish
leadership to come out and explain to everybody exactly what's going on.
Well, he's probably a part of it.
Well, maybe.
This His probably has been
the Federal Reserve chairman.
Well, not the chairman now. This other guy, a good friend, which his name is so ironic. He's a good friend of the globalists. But Marvin Goodfriend has been nominated for a seat on the board of directors. He's not yet chairman, although it could conceivably happen.
Well, if he's a globalist, you see, that's the thing about Trump. It's like he has picked his cabinet to be half and half, half socialist international, fully on board with the agenda, and then half American, you know, representing American interests.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, they'll be fighting the global war against socialism within our own government.
Yeah.
Which is what's happening with the FBI and our Department of Justice. I'm not going to say just the FBI, because it's the entire Department of Justice.
Yeah, the other thing to come out of that conference call that I think is worthy of pointing out, and I think this has probably been pointed out elsewhere, but Al Franken, you know, Al Frankenstein, I like to call him, he came out this week and said he's going to step down. He said he was going to resign, and I think he said he's going to resign in a few weeks. Look for Al Franken to stay. He said he didn't resign, and that's what everybody interpreted his comments to be. Oh, he's stepping down. He didn't say he was. Saying you're going to resign and saying you're resigning now are two different things. So he left the door ajar to then say, you know what, I'm not going anywhere. So
maybe he's waiting for somebody to beg him to stay.
Or maybe he's waiting for the outcome of this Tuesday election. And if Roy Moore gets in there, he says, well, you know what, if that guy could get in there, I'm not going anywhere.
I don't know. He's such
It'd
a
be interesting.
Al
yeah,
Franken
he's a snake. They're all snakes. It's just astounding how dysfunctional our government is, and what a great transition into the FBI.
Yeah, well, it's dysfunctional because of what I said. It's like the phase in of the global, the integration of our government into a global governing system.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing with women, you know, I now understand why they so much wanted Hillary Clinton. There was a fourth world conference on women in Beijing in September of 1995. And at that conference, they said women need to be.
Women need to be. Women need to be what?
Yeah, at the center of globalization, because women bring the maternal type perspective. But you know, as I was reading this, I was thinking, boy, whoever wrote this, they don't really understand women at all.
Well, they don't understand political correctness either. I mean, you can't identify women with having babies. That's
well, you think. You know, women are far more vicious than men, I think, when it comes down to when they're in a protective stance.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, men are more easygoing, I think.
Men just are gropers.
They're gropers and rapers. This is all it is, you know?
Yeah.
They don't know how to keep their hands or their lips or anything else to themselves. That's the problem. That's what we're supposed to believe today. And I honestly, I've pondered this a lot because I don't believe these movements start organically most of the time. All of a sudden, all these women just all of a sudden decided after all of these years to just come forward. And bear in mind, folks, I'm not defending any of these men. If any of them are guilty, then they deserve everything they get and more. Okay? So I'm not defending anybody that would, you know, touch anybody inappropriately or anything like that. I mean, anybody that knows me knows well enough that I would never do that. All that being said, though, why would this be materializing now in the media? Why would this be materializing now in social media and every place? This hashtag Me Too. The Me Too movement, like so many other movements, they're pushed along. They're pushed along. They're helped along. And there may be some of it that's organic, but
No.
Well, I don't doubt that there may be a few people out there that may, I say, you know, come out and join the fray once the fray gets built up, you know, and like so many other things. It's like a school shooting. Okay, whenever a school shooting takes place, there's inevitably going to be copycatters because there's always mentally deranged and somewhat unstable people out there kind of teetering on the edge anyway, and they see something in the media and this shooters, this perpetrator is getting a lot of attention, and hey, I could be famous too. And then so they go and plot something and do something and pull it off. So there's copycats and there's people that join things. But the by and large, is it organic? I don't think the roots of it aren't. And
no, it's the Socialist International. It's a strategy from the playbook. It's, you know, each Socialist International, they have a campaign. That's it. That's the word. It's a campaign for an objective.
Yeah.
And for global governance and our global home, the global village. See, this was about the time when Hillary used that phrase, our global village.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was behind that was this strategy by the Socialist International that began in 1976 and has moved forward ever since. But our media has been the champion and the cover of the Socialist International for a global system of governing. One size fits all.
Yeah.
You know, and they would, if Hillary had been, they would have achieved a milestone. It would have been a milestone in the transition.
Well, we dodged a bullet with Hillary Clinton, but did we really? Because, hey, the plan moves forward. And one thing that some of these hearings can, again, stress to us is the reality that Trump is being led along by the nose, by the intelligentsia. And that seems very, very clear with some of these panel discussions that we've been dealing with. Anyway, so I think I've said enough about the Roy Moore thing. I wanted to get to the FBI, this corruption at the FBI. Because we've got, of course, this special counsel investigation going on. But the special counsel investigation is tainted. Robert Mueller is former FBI director and now leading the special counsel investigating Russia's impact on the election and all of Trump's alleged collusion and all of this stuff. But he is himself very much, in my opinion, an operative for the Democratic Party. And some of the people, some of the things that he did when he was at the FBI is illustrated in some of these clips. That you pointed me to the House Oversight Committee, the FBI Director Christopher Wray, who is in there now. He's being questioned. First, he's drilled by Representative Louis Gohmert. regarding the politicization of the agency, how Robert Mueller gutted the agency of the old-time experienced personnel in favor of yes men. I didn't know exactly what all you wanted to clip, so I kind of clipped the whole thing. We can comment as we go here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Director, we appreciate you being here. I was so thrilled when first got to question Director Comey. I didn't realize what direction that would take. But you are taking an FBI department that was weakened by Mueller's time. And I'm not asking for a comment on that, but I know from his five-year upper-out policy, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, he got rid of thousands and thousands of years of experience. I came to believe because he wanted younger people that were more yes men. And so he got rid of people that could have advised him against some of the poor decisions he made, whether it's squandering millions of dollars on software that didn't work and wouldn't work, and people he got rid of knew that, but all kinds of things. And I came to understand as a young prosecutor who knew the law better than some of the older lawyers that there is something to be gained from experience. And so we lost thousands of years of experience, and Comey took over a weakened FBI because of what Mueller did, and Mueller made a lot of mistakes he wouldn't have otherwise. So that was rather sad. But I want to, I'll be glad to have my friend across the aisle know that I am outraged by the government's collusion with Russia. I was outraged. I didn't think President Bush and our State Department went far enough in condemning the invasion into Georgia by Putin and the Russians, but they did take some strong actions to make known their discomfort and their upset over that. And of course, the response by the Obama administration was to send over a plastic reset button with the wrong Russian word on it. But they made clear nonetheless that we're not bothered by your invasion of Georgia. You can invade anybody you want. That was the message the Russians took. And I am really outraged at the allowing of Russia to buy our uranium, even though the FBI and the Justice Department had already found out that they were trying to get our uranium illegally with bribes and violating the law, and that has not been addressed. So, yes, I am outraged. But as you're aware, Deputy Director McCabe was involved in highly charged political cases that have been controversial due to his political leanings.
Okay, now those political leanings, that's very important what he's saying here, because as we've pointed out here before, McCabe's wife received financial support for her 2015 Senate campaign from Virginia Governor and close Clinton friend Terry McAuliffe. So that's very relevant here, and that's, I think, what he's referring to.
Was involved in highly charged political cases that have been controversial due to his political leanings. So I want to ask you if you are aware of any other senior FBI executives that are aligned with McCabe's political views. Yes or no? You aware of any other senior FBI executives?
I'm not aware of any senior FBI executives who are allowing improper political considerations to affect their work with me right now.
Okay, let me ask you this. I'm going to ask about specific executives, some of whom have been promoted by McCabe within the last few years. So my question to you, Director, is, are you aware of any of the following people openly aligning themselves with the political bias expressed by McCabe or openly speaking against this administration? First, Carl Gattis. Yes or no?
My experience with Executive Assistant Director Gattis has been very positive, and he's been a complete professional in all my interaction with him.
But are you aware of him openly aligning himself with the political bias that McCabe expressed?
Well, I'm going to quarrel a little bit with the premise of your question about Deputy Director McCabe.
All right.
As far as Executive Assistant Director Gattis, as I said, he's been a complete professional, and by that I mean to include
himself with political bias against the Trump administration?
No.
Mike McGarrity.
No.
Same question, and I'll take McCabe out of it. Are you aware of him openly aligning himself with political bias against the Trump administration?
No.
Josh Skule.
No.
Larissa Mincer.
I actually don't know who that is.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Fair enough. Brian Parman.
No.
All right. Thank you. I know you appointed Brian Parman to the New York field office counterterrorism division, so it is important that we have fair-minded people. And there's never been a requirement that anybody not be able to vote or have political beliefs, just that they not let them affect their output.
I said when Trump fired Comey, I said that he should fire Andrew McCabe as well, because McCabe took over as acting FBI director after Comey was outed or fired, and knowing the political connections there, nothing good can come out of Andrew McCabe staying there at the FBI. But apparently, the problem seems to be much deeper than we realized at the time.
Well, the reason why that clip, why I wanted you to play that, was because he talked about how many people at the FBI that had experience that they got rid of. Mm-hmm. And Mueller had a policy of upper out. Now, that's General Electric Jack Welch.
Who is? What is?
The upper out.
Okay.
You either move up or you get out.
Gotcha.
And in some businesses, some professions, maybe that makes sense. It does not make sense when you need to have people who have experience. But if your objective is to destroy an organization, it's a perfect strategy.
Hmm.
Okay, now, George Tenet, who was director of the CIA at the time of 9/11, he did exactly the same thing to the CIA. He gutted the CIA of its older agents, its experienced agents, which is why there are so many of them on the internet, you know, speaking out. And I have a clip from one agent who said that they were told.
But they were told what?
Huh?
You said they were told what?
They were told that our government is no longer in the business of government.
Well, yeah.
Okay, now if you understand how transitions work, you phase some things in. Now, for like 30 years, ever since the Reagan administration, they had been privatizing our government.
Mm-hmm.
And basically weakening the government. After 9/11, you know, when they had, I don't know if you ever paid attention to this, but how many new people were moved into position following 9/11? Mueller is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he went to work for the government the week before 9/11.
Mm-hmm. I had just kind of woke up prior to... 96 is really when I started waking up. My father, I should say, kind of, you know, he would talk about the John Birch Society and, you know, he kind of introduced me a little bit to the idea of the New World Order. When we were growing up, we used to sit by the fireplace and he'd talk to me about things.
I had no idea about any of this. Yeah. I knew that our IRS had been, the systems of the IRS, I knew that they had been compromised, sabotaged, because of articles that I read in the newspaper between about 1995 and 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I knew it is because the government rarely ever mentioned when projects to redesign systems failed. It was like almost unheard of. They don't, because they don't want you to know that there were failures, at least back then. Yeah. But anyway, so another thing that Mueller talked about was the case management system that didn't work. Now, I watched that hearing live when it was live, and the FBI had spent $100 million system that was an absolute failure because it didn't have the capacity to handle all the FBI agents all across the country. So apparently it must have been designed by some PC jockey who had no idea about big systems.
Mm-hmm.
And so they probably designed it to sit on a server or some stupid like that.
Yeah. Well,
And they spent $100 million on that. But early after 2001, it was like system after system after system the government had hearings on that were failures. They spent billions of dollars on systems that failed.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have this controversy, speaking of the corruption at the FBI and the political bias at the FBI, of Peter Strzok, Special Agent Peter Strzok. There's been this intense controversy surrounding him, where he evidently sent texts. I guess he was forced out by Robert Mueller because it was revealed he sent texts over to Lisa Page, who was another FBI official. I guess they were romantically involved, according to what I've read here. But anyway, very anti-Trump texts that he was sending, and which revealed that, you know, he had an axe to grind. And so this whole investigation has been, there's a shadow cast upon it. And I think where we're going with all of this is that they want Trump out. It's all political, but the whole government is like this, it seems. Nothing can function properly anymore because everything is just rot with corruption and over-politicization. Nobody cares to do the right thing for the country. That's the bottom line. We got to take the bottom of the hour break. Let's hang on. Hold your thoughts. We'll pick it up on the other side of the break. Stay with us. This is Govern America.
Dr. Shami, I come seeking your wisdom.
My wisdom is this. It doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you are sincere in your belief.
Oh, you are so wise.
Yes. Now, why are you carrying a 2x4?
Oh, I'm a member of the religious wood bonkers, and we believe that if you hit a person on the side of the head with this holy 2x4, they will feel nothing but pleasure and go immediately to heaven.
You believe that?
You said believing is all that matters.
Yes, I did say that.
In fact, let me send you to heaven.
Hold on.
You're not supposed to duck.
Wait a minute. There are physical laws.
Quit ducking.
And one of those laws is that if you hit a person on the head with a 2x4, they will experience a lot of pain.
Wait, if there are physical laws to obey, then there must be spiritual laws to obey.
Now, I didn't say that.
Which means I may have to be concerned about truth. I may even have to examine if Jesus was who he claimed to be, which means reading the Bible.
Well, now, let's not get rash.
Another message from Lifeline Productions, the comic strip of radio, at lifelinepro.com.
With Govern America News this hour, I'm Darren Weeks. The Bureau of Land Management agent whose gun was stolen and used to kill Kate Steinle has been promoted by the agency just 5 months after the incident. Agent John Wachowski's unsecured Sig Sauer 40 caliber was stolen and ended up in the hands of Jose Zarate, who had admitted to firing the weapon when Kate Steinle was murdered. Zarate was acquitted in the death of Steinle to the outrage of much of the nation. He was found guilty of possession of a firearm. President Trump on Monday cut large swaths from two massive controversial national monuments in Utah, opening areas to potential activities like oil drilling, mining, and grazing. The actions are nearly certain to spawn lawsuits, however. Trump scaled back Barack Obama's 1.4 million Bears Ears National Monument to 220,000 acres, an 84% reduction, and Bill Clinton's 1.9 million acre Grand Staircase Escalante to 1 million acres, a reduction by nearly half. UC Berkeley researchers claim to have developed a robotic learning technology that enables robots to imagine the future of their actions so that they can figure out how to manipulate objects they've never encountered before. They say that in the future, this technology could help self-driving cars anticipate future events on the road, but caution that the technology is still very much in its infancy. And care to tell all your problems to a robot? Mobile talk therapy and life coaching apps have proliferated in the past few years as traditional therapy has remained difficult to obtain. The so-called Affordable Care Act requires health insurance to cover mental health as part of standard medical services, but many people still do not have access to treatment. The Kaiser Family Foundation claims that more than 106 million people, nearly a third of the country, live in areas that are federally designated as having a shortage of mental health care professionals. That's the news this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
Did you hear?
What?
There was another burglary last night, just down the street, and the family was home sleeping.
Scary. You ever thought about buying a gun?
Yeah, but I'd worry about my kids. You hear about all these gun accidents.
Accidents do happen, it's true. But the fact is, less than 200 children die in gun accidents every year. Far more children accidentally drown or get killed riding bikes. And thousands of children die in car accidents every year.
Ooh, talk about scary.
And according to the statistics, people who own guns, parents like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year and save countless lives.
Wow. Do you own a gun?
Yeah, I do.
Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. Mickey Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. As we continue on here, I see out of the Independent, U.S. military to develop genetically modified plants to spy in environments unsuitable for traditional sensors. They say new synthetic biology program makes use of natural capabilities to gather intelligence. They talk about the U.S. military wanting to deploy plants as the next generation of intelligence gatherers. Genetically modified plants could be employed as self-sustaining sensors to gather information on settings unsuitable for more traditional technologies. This is another thing that the Defense Advanced Projects Research Agency is doing. They're responsible for the developing of emerging technologies in the U.S. military, of course. In the past, they've produced information-gathering technologies such as satellites and seismographs employed to ensure Soviet compliance with the nuclear test ban treaty. But in this new initiative, the Independent out of the U.K. says it's termed Advanced Plant Technologies Programs. The agency is looking to the natural world for help. They say plants are highly attuned to their environments and naturally manifest physiological responses to basic stimuli such as light and temperature, but also in some cases to touch, chemicals, pests, and pathogens. They're modeling techniques that make it possible to reprogram these detection and reporting capabilities for a wide range of stimuli, which would not only open up new intelligence streams, but also reduce the personnel risks and costs associated with traditional sensors. We did a show one time on this program back several years ago now called, I think it was called 1,000 Sensors, or maybe it was 1,000,000 Sensors. And we're living in the Orwell's world. It's very apparent that that's the case. We were talking earlier about Gates' smart city. How all of these technologies are being developed. Everything is being weaponized today, and now we have plants. Plants that are going to be spying on people. It's just really incredible. Is there any stopping this? This is really a nightmare scenario. But before the break, we were talking about the FBI. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, the Department of Justice signed a memorandum of understanding with the military to develop non-lethal technologies. Everything that DARPA is doing in terms of surveillance and environment sensing, whatever kind of sensing there is, it is being done because of both the military and the Department of Justice, which is really brilliant strategy for the Socialist International, right?
Yeah.
They get the military scientists and the Department of Justice, and there you go, turn them loose. There is one more thing I wanted to say about that guy, Strzok,
yes.
Peter Strzok.
Yes.
Okay, it's very, very odd that they put him in the HR department. For guys like, you know, FBI, high-level FBI guy, normally what they do for punishment is, you know, send them up to some place like the Arctic to investigate, you know, the seal hunt or something like that. They do not put them in the HR department. What he'll be doing is looking at who is on the FBI's payroll. Because that's been an issue in Congress before, that the FBI has off-books employees, about 60,000 of them around the country, that are informants, or, you know, I call them the Stasi, but they actually set people up. So the fact that they moved him into the HR department is very disturbing to me, because he could be, he may be involved in getting people off the payroll.
Well, I think he's been outed now. I think he's been pushed out as a result of these text messages.
No, he was transferred to the HR department.
Oh, okay.
Human resource.
Okay, so he was just moved off the investigation then.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Supposedly as punishment, but the personnel department in an agency like the FBI is hugely important. And since he is anti-Trump, I mean, it could be that he is the cleanup man. You know, getting rid of payroll records to people who are operatives of the Clinton socialist operation, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is astounding, all the stuff that's materializing now. And I do have the Trey Gowdy speech, for lack of a better way of saying it.
We don't have to play that one.
Okay. All right. Well, that's one of the things. The corruption, I just don't see any rooting out going on here. It's very unfortunate, but
they need a completely independent team, and my preference would be that they had people who are systems analysts who can go in and not, as well as law enforcement, you know, people that are law enforcement from the bottom, you know, of the agency, who are FBI agents, but who are not part of the whole management, Washington, D.C. management structure.
Right.
So they need to investigate both the systems and the management practices at the FBI and look at the corruption from a holistic point of view.
Yeah, indeed. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I certainly have my doubts. Now, last week, as we said, in fact, if you're just joining us, we explained some of this stuff at the top of the broadcast. I'm not going to do it again here. But we did have to end the show abruptly last week, and so if you were started off listening to a live broadcast and knowing that you hadn't heard anything before, and it started suddenly sounding rather familiar to you, you must have missed the announcement that we were ending the show early. And I won't go into again. You know, it was a family emergency. Everything's okay now. But the point is that we were talking about the China One Belt, One Road initiative, And there is a map in last week's show notes which shows this pretty well, just for those that are unfamiliar with it. We're looking at, I think, six corridors. There's a new Eurasian land bridge running from western China to western Russia through Kazakhstan. The China-Mongolia-Russia corridor running from northern China to eastern Russia. Then there is the China-Central Asia-West Asia corridor running from western China to Turkey. And then there is the China-Indochina Peninsula corridor running from the southern China into Singapore. That one's kind of interesting, too, because you released a map, Vicky. You pointed me to a map that shows that the original NASCO corridor, the NAFTA superhighway system, goes from Mexico to Singapore. So that's why I thought, you know, that probably the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I believe Singapore, if I remember correctly, was a TPP country. So that, to me, would connect the TPP potentially with NAFTA. That's why I was saying last week that I think the TPP was kind of an extension of NAFTA. But they're working on other Asian agreements that would take the place of the Trans-Pacific Partnership since Trump killed the TPP. I think that was one of the things that enabled him to say, okay, TPP's dead and everybody celebrates. And we were talking before about how there's no way that this thing is going to be killed for good, because the Trans-Pacific Partnership, too much money, too much energy, too much effort has been spent to put this thing into place for them to just let it die. And so we know it's going to be back. And in fact, I think they're already working on the replacement. And it's under a different name, just like we said it would be. But the point is that Singapore, this China Indochina Peninsula corridor running from southern China to Singapore. And then there's also the China-Myanmar-Bangladesh-India corridor running from southern China to Myanmar. And then China-Pakistan corridor running from southwestern China to Pakistan. That is the belt. Then there is the Maritime Silk Road running from the Chinese coast through Singapore to the Mediterranean. This is all a big, massive initiative that the Communist Chinese have put forward and invested a lot of money. I forget the exact dollar amount, but I believe it's in the billions. I think it would easily be in the billions. In order to compete with the United States and actually surpass the U.S. Into becoming a major superpower. And I think they literally threatened to do just that. I mean, they've got their eye on this thing, and they have every intention of doing it. So, anyway, last week we were talking, and in fact, when we got interrupted, I had mentioned that they're doing the same thing, very similar to the same thing in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Since we had to prematurely interrupt the show, our panel discussion from the Center for Strategic and International Studies, we were playing clips from that. They held the talk on the subject of private sector development in Afghanistan. Now, just for background, I want to replay a couple of these that we had already played, because you got to hear the rest of it in context. This is Gregory Hunter. He's with the U.S. Agency for International Development, a part of the State Department. He talks about market centers, which sound a lot like regional clusters that are going up here in the United States and elsewhere.
I feel very fortunate to be returning to USAID at a time when we actually do have a strategy. Within it, then, we have a component, as I said, for Afghanistan, for Pakistan. The Afghanistan role for USAID, if you will, is to help with three things. First, to sustain the gains made in the social sector over the last 16 years, health, education, and women's empowerment. The second is to help build the bond between the government and the citizens, and that through three things: through the service delivery that I mentioned, through credible elections, and through significantly reduced corruption. The third of three is private sector-led economic development, focused on market centers and, importantly, but not exclusively, on exports.
So,
there you go. That's the whole agenda. And I found the smoking gun, you know, that lets me know that the reports that were initiated by Willy Brandt were the game plan that led to the Socialist International and the global governing system. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a report called Our Global Neighborhood, and it was published, I think, in 1990. Okay, but I have a paragraph here that I'm going to read to you.
Okay.
What it says is several functional specialist institutions should also be mentioned, such as the International Telecommunications Union, the International Maritime Organization, the Bank for International Settlements, the Paris Club. The ITU has responsibility now shared with GATT, that's the Generalized Agreements on Trade and Tariff, for creating a regime of global governance for the rapidly expanding interconnected network of telecommunication, multimedia, and information technology systems. BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, provides the world's financial system with an underpinning of cooperative supervision. In these quiet, unspectacular ways, a system of global governance is being put into place, albeit on a piecemeal basis.
Hmm.
Okay, now,
wow.
What lets me know that this really is the plan is because in 1996, Al Gore, who was involved in the, quote, reinvention of our government, went down to Brazil to speak to the International Telecommunications, to a conference of the International Telecommunications Union, and gave a speech asking them for their assistance to build out this global network.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
So Al Gore was following this plan.
Mm-hmm. What's amazing to me is they come. Nothing is really hidden anymore, Vicky. It's very apparent that they don't feel any need to hide it. It's all right there in your face because they're counting on the fact that people aren't going to do anything about it. And really, what can we do about it? That's the question. How do you fight technology?
If we had some leadership who understood what was being done, they could roll this all back and take back our systems of government. But as long as you have integrated within our government people who are members of the Socialist International, who are moving towards a global governing system.
Who were adopted into the Chinese Academy.
Yeah. We'll never be able to stop it. You know, but we need some leadership who really understands what is happening and why. I mean, we had some legislation that was passed here in Idaho. I think I've mentioned it before, that includes reference to a Hague Treaty in our state law, calling for our judges to recognize decisions of foreign courts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, well, that system is a federal government system integrated into the Hague system. It was the European Union that paid for the development of the system. It's being run at the Hague, which means that they will control the rules under which the system operates. And they've integrated. You know, as long as we have these kinds of things happening, and these kinds of things, no newspaper goes out and announces, "Hey, we're integrating our systems of government into a global governing system and the justice system at The Hague or at the OECD or anything like that, you know, until we have some leadership that recognizes that and rallies the people, you know, to support, protect, and defend our U.S. constitutional way of government, we will never stop this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Gregory Hunter moves on to Pakistan, and he talks about the problems they face in overcoming tribalism. This is, I think, where we got cut off last week. He also talks about how they are working to build an air corridor. An air corridor.
Now, in Pakistan, where we've been engaged for a long time. So the first one is to help Pakistan merge Fatah with Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, or to mainstream the federally administered tribal area, Fatah, in any way they feel appropriate with the adjacent province of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. And in doing that, to help make that area a place where the people who have lived there all along can live a normal life, and to help there were 1.6 million people displaced by conflict into the rest of Pakistan. About 85 to 90% of them have returned. So to make it possible for them to reintegrate. So that's the first piece. The second piece is to help communities in Pakistan, particularly the areas vulnerable to extremism, to gain resilience against that. And the third is helping Pakistan attract private investment to create jobs, particularly for the younger people, because of the very large youth bulge that Pakistan has in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And also in the broader context, as I'll mention in a minute, to make the relationship with India as constructive as possible. Within that, one of the things that Afghanistan has done over the last year is to create an air corridor between Kabul, Kandahar, and India, and Delhi. This has been a real support to businesses, private Afghan businesses that are exporting the processed product of the countryside.
Yeah, opium.
The things for which Afghanistan is well known, particularly mm-hmm. in markets in the region.
Opium.
So the fruit, fresh and dry, nuts, carpets.
Opium.
Marble, onyx, gemstones, cashmere wool, those kinds of things. And so this air corridor has been quite successful, and now, as I understand from my last trip to Kabul, they're contemplating extending that to the UAE, Kazakhstan, some other Central Asian countries, and perhaps Turkey. As that happens, and as we collaborated, Hisham, with our business colleagues in Egypt and other places, the processing or the ability to invest in plant and equipment to process the product of the countryside depends importantly on, one, a policy, regulatory, and administrative environment that's conducive to that, and no one knows it better than the business people themselves. Second, security, electricity, easy, clear access to land, and a transparent relationship between the business and the government, so they can pay their taxes, get their permits, and do all the things that they need to do.
Pay their taxes, get their permits, like good little slaves.
To do that kind of business. We think that that is a real opportunity for Afghanistan, and so we're going to be doing everything we can to support it, and would like to see 5, 7, 10 years hence what one can see if one drives from Cairo to Alexandria, drip irrigation all the way, producing high value crops for the local and export markets.
Uh-huh.
You know what? I think this is where I said, you know, right before you got the knock on the window, I said what they're trying to do is to is to drop a high-tech administrative state
yep.
into an area that is basically still tribal.
Yeah, exactly. They're not ready for it. That's what you said last week.
Yeah.
The war is still going on, and we're trying to do the nation building with the technology, the air corridor. It's full speed ahead with the technocratic New World Order, which is exactly what this is, and the regionalism, the regional integration. And in this same cookie-cutter world approach, as you've very well coined that phrase, it's a cookie-cutter world. It is. I mean, they are doing the same strategy everywhere. It's remarkable.
Yes, because it's a global plan, and the China's One Belt One Road. I don't know that it was actually China's plan to begin with, but they certainly are building it. But it did not start in 2013; it started in 1991 here in the United States with the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act again. Because I've researched the whole thing, you know, researched it forward. And you know, when somebody sent me a link to the article about the China One Belt, One Road, you know, it's like the light bulb goes off. Okay, you know, this is a global plan, which I already knew. But the centers of technological, I forget what the word they used, but those are the ports. They are the inland ports and the seaports, and that's where commercial...
That's where
this whole global system built. They do have a world customs system with all of the countries exporting their production and importing their consumption. Those hubs will be a perfect location for taxing the world's economic activity.
There you go. And that's what it boils down to. Managing the world's resources, including human capital. That's the bottom line. All right, top of the hour already. Time's going by very quickly. Hour number three is straight ahead. Please stay with us, folks. This is Governed America.
Hi, I'm Stephen, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arnn, on the enduring importance of federalism.
Many in Washington today have grown so accustomed to centralized bureaucracy that they think of federalism as old-fashioned, kind of like fife and drum music. Those who wrote the Constitution saw federalism as a vital principle of free government in a large republic. The division of power between the federal government, state governments, and local governments would serve as an important protection against tyranny. The founders also understood that while the federal government is essential for national matters like foreign policy and defense, governments closer to the people were far better suited to oversee local matters. As we see in the problems that result from centralized bureaucracy today, there's nothing out of date about the founders' argument for federalism.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Most people realize their body needs clean water to function properly. Pure is the cleanest water, also known as distilled water. Some frauds pushing fake science and ignorant people repeating their disinformation and half-truths will tell you distilled water leaches minerals from the body. What they fail to tell you is distilled water only attracts and flushes inorganic minerals from your body. These are minerals your body cannot process and can interfere with your proper body functions. Distilled water does flush these inorganic materials from your body and is an effective and natural way to cleanse your body. ABR sells a distiller that distills 1 gallon every 3.5 hours. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com, click on the superstore, go to the distiller, check the pricing and how to order, and watch the video explaining in detail why distilled water is pure water.
Governed America. Back documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the New World Order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, this is the third and final hour of Govern America. Darren Wicks and Vicki Davis here with you. GovernAmerica.com is the website. That's GovernAmerica.com. And we're talking about the situation with this global regional integration going on, One Belt, One Road, China initiative, but also the Afghan-Pakistan initiative as well, as these cookie-cutter approaches take place around the world. And your phone calls are welcome if you want. We do have a few more sound bites to get to, but we certainly, if anybody has anything that you want to call in about, 844-646-8376, toll-free 844-6-GOVERN. As we move along here, I don't know if you wanted to say anything before we move on to the next sound bite, because I think there's a free trade agreement in the works in the not-too-distant future for Afghanistan, that whole region.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that they're creating regional units, because it's much easier from a global governing point of view to have a governing commission over a region like the European Commission, and like they have done to the United States with the I forget what it's called. I think the acronym is BEC, but they built the common market for North America, initially starting with an environmental agreement, the La Paz Treaty, and then building on it from there, you know, with the NAFTA and
You're talking
ultimately
about what originally was Border Region 21. Then it became Border 21, and then it became Border 2012, as I recall. Now I believe it evolved.
Well, 2012 was first. That was a plan for 2012, but it actually started in 1983 when that treaty was signed.
Yeah, now it's Border 2020. It's evolved. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they just keep revamping it. But, anyway.
And I found on my hard drive, as I was putting this together, I found a memorandum of understanding that Lisa, what the heck was her name? She was the administrator of the EPA. She signed a memorandum of
Was it Lisa Jackson?
Yeah, Lisa Jackson, that's right. She signed a memorandum of understanding with the United Nations Environmental Program. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you the link to that,
okay,
so that people can read it. But the independent zone, the geographically defined international zone created by the La Paz Treaty, that was the EPA was put in charge of that. It gave the administrator of the EPA control of an international territory and authorization to agree to work with international organizations. So she signed an agreement that is effectively already covered by treaty.
Yeah.
With the United Nations Environment Program.
Yeah, another foreign entanglement.
Recently, we sponsored a trade event for 3 days at the end of September in India, where we had, all told, between Indian and Afghan businessmen, women, government officials, media people, civil society representatives, there were about 1,700 people that participated in that event for 3 days. Out of it came $27 million in signed sales contracts, Afghan product, for the Indian customers, and another approximately $240 million in various types of agreements that have yet to come to fruition, but some of them will. That shows, though, that there are existing businesses in Afghanistan that know how to deal with the region and have product that's acceptable. So our job is to make that grow. And we're going to be doing a number of things to support those businesses, including, as we've done with many of our programs, that many of them, as those who went to the event in India, are run and owned by women. So another piece of that that we're now looking at is what are the electricity, what are the electric power requirements of the growth of the private sector in Afghanistan? And so we have had for years our support to the electric power sector, and we're still working on that. But if this is to succeed, that there would be significant private sector-led economic growth that would importantly relate to exports to the region and other places, then what are the electric power requirements of that? So we're trying to get a handle on that together with our Afghan colleagues in the government and the private sector by the end of January, and then to see what we can do to hone in on that and support it as we move forward. An important part of it, and I was in Peshawar a few weeks ago talking with the leadership of the Chamber of Commerce there, and they said that 70% of the jobs in Peshawar depend on trade with Afghanistan. It's also true when you talk to people in Afghanistan who are in business that a lot of the opportunity relates to exporting, and it would be nice if there were free movement of goods across the Afghan-Pakistan border. And so from both sides, from Pakistan and from Afghanistan, we're going to be doing everything that we can to help get to yes on that. And yes, in a sustainable way, because yes, for 2 weeks is not really a good way to build your business.
So there you go. I think that in the coming days, we're going to be looking at free trade agreements coming out of that particular region.
Yeah, and you're going to be looking at a lot of really ticked off people in the tribal regions.
Yeah.
In the border area, because that really, as I understand it, in Pakistan, that's really kind of an ungoverned space. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, back in our old West days, it's like trying to bring civilization to the Badlands or something.
Yeah.
So
he talked about other initiatives they are engaged in, which amounts to the U.S. taxpayer, of course, funding all of it. Building the infrastructure, capacity building, so that the Middle East can be open for business.
Now, right. You know what? They commit fraud because when American people ask about how much money you're giving to foreign countries, the Congress and public officials, they always go to foreign aid.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, we just give like 1% to foreign aid. Well, the thing is that they have distributed the money allocated for foreign government, for foreign countries, within our agencies of government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got money going to USAID, but we also have money going from the HHS, healthcare, and, that's where our healthcare systems are located. Money going to the global health program embedded within HHS.
Right.
So we don't really have any idea how much money our government is spending in foreign countries to build the global governing system throughout the whole world.
Yeah, and do you think they're going to stop hating us after we spend all this money?
Oh, hell no.
I highly doubt.
No, they hate us more.
That seems to be always
the case. We're more hated now than ever in my lifetime, in my memory.
Well, look what we're doing for you. You don't want our democracy? We're exporting our democracy. Surely you don't want our democracy
enforced
in a barrel of a gun?
In one of the reports I was looking at, or one of the websites, they were talking about how, the global governing system is protecting cultural heritage and promoting cultural diversity. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do both at the same time. Right. You either protect cultural heritage or you promote cultural diversity. But they're fundamentally at odds with each other.
Yes, indeed. All right, so anyway, moving along here. They're talking about, you know, well, let's just dissect what he says here.
The final point is that there's a U.S.-Afghanistan compact, which is an Afghan initiative that includes over 200 performance measures related to the whole gamut of issues that face the country, including private sector development issues. And so that's an Afghan initiative. The government has said, and President Ghani has emphasized, that they're going forward with that. We're available and are, in fact, helping them to move on those things to the degree that that's requested and that we have some capability to do it. And in parallel to that, we have it's not brand new now, but it's called the New Development Partnership, which is taking key reform measures, performance measures, and relating U.S. financial support to them. So it's a four-year, $800 million program with $200 million a year related to specific performance measures agreed between the U.S., AID, and Afghanistan. So those are elements that can support the more specific private sector development initiative that we know is absolutely essential to Afghanistan achieving the goal that President Ghani laid out at the senior officials meeting in Kabul, which is to move from talking about how to get more donor assistance to how to get private investment so that Afghanistan can stand on its own, pay its bills, and move ahead. So that, again, relates to the overall objective of the South Asia strategy, which is to help Afghanistan be stable enough to manage extremism within its borders and help Pakistan be secure enough to play a constructive role in the region.
Now, if anybody believes that all of this investment is going to stop, you know, radicals and terrorism and all of the stuff that's going on over there, I think you're in for a rude awakening. This is
It's a system designed by technocrats for technocrats.
Yeah. So anyway, Jeffrey Grieco is the president and CEO of the Afghan American Chamber of Commerce. He's formerly the United States Agency for International Development. He talks broadly about the great IT infrastructure progress that's being made over there.
So I'm going to try to whip through just a few private sector successes in a broad categorical way that I think identify how far they've come, really. I'm going to start with ICT, a sector that's very close to my heart. So in 2001, there was virtually no cellular or mobile telephony in Afghanistan, let alone women having an access to anything telephony-related. By 2016, over 18 million mobile subscribers now exist with a penetration rate for women of between 86 and 92% having access to it. That is an incredible achievement. Now, how did the Afghan government and the Afghan private sector got there? It was with a lot of support from the donor community, and there's no arguing with that. The early donor investments that started as early as 2002 came from the Department of Defense, the State Department, USAID, helping to implement over $2.6 billion worth of infrastructure within the ICT sector inside Afghanistan, and upon that infrastructural base was an additional $2 billion of Afghan and other direct investment coming from outside donors to help build up some of the IT infrastructure inside Afghanistan to bring it to where it was a few years ago. Unfortunately, we're going to talk in a few minutes about what needs to be done now, and this is one of the sectors where they've fallen rapidly behind the investments they needed to make now to keep ICT a really big success story for themselves. Secondly is agriculture. So everybody knows Afghanistan is primarily an agrarian economy. 22% of the licit economy, and I'm not counting poppy, in the licit economy is in Afghanistan is ag-driven as a percentage of the 2016 GDP numbers. That's a pretty sizable percentage. Afghanistan is agriculture is still the main driver for employment. It's the main driver for subsistence living. Wheat is the main component of that. Afghanistan is now the largest per capita wheat consumer in the world, outstripping every developing country as well, a developed country as well. The main products in Afghanistan agriculture include not just wheat and opium. Unfortunately, it is a big part of Afghanistan still. Fruits, nuts, wools, even mutton, sheepskins, and lambskins are counted in the agricultural sector as key potential export items for them to other countries. There's already a lot of exporting going on with pomegranates and other dates and fruits and nuts. Third area is infrastructure development. There's been a major amount of infrastructure development done by the United States, by the ADB, Asian Development Bank, the World Bank, and others, as well as the Afghan government, in a series of private sector investments that will hopefully longer term be privatized to be fully scaled as utilities and other operations in Afghanistan. This includes the Kajaki Dam. They recently announced a phase two for Kajaki, and the contract was awarded to General Electric for the second large generator at Kajaki. The Casa 1000 project, there's a Turkmen 500 volt line that's been constructed and is almost finished. The Cross Salang 500 volt line is almost finished. The DABS project, which took the Kabul main public utility and turned it into a private, semi-private, so hopefully soon to be privatized fully and available to a foreign investor if they're interested in Afghanistan power systems long term. They've also spent a lot of time on the regionalization, not just of their electricity and their power supply grid. They've done power purchase agreements.
Okay, did you hear that, folks? Here's the thing. All this stuff is being done. All of this stuff is being initiated and built, and who's funding most of it? He talked about foreign direct investment and attracting private donors, and there's some of that, I'm sure. But this is the Agency for International Development, which is out of the State Department. U.S. taxpayers are paying a fortune to invest in this economy, and build the infrastructure, build the capacity, build all this IT stuff. And for what purpose? So that they can have an economy? While ours goes to crap.
Right.
Our economy, our people are suffering here. Go ahead.
They need the IT so that they can have global health and education systems. You know, so we don't get health care here, but we're giving it to,
Well, they're not going to really get it there either. I mean, it's not, you know, we've talked a million times on this program about it's not really about their health. It's not really
that's true.
It's about tracking people. It's about controlling people from cradle to grave. And that's what we're doing for the good Afghan people here. We're building the infrastructure so that they can be tracked and controlled like the rest of the world. Congratulations. Welcome to your democracy, Afghanistan.
They've also spent a lot of time on the regionalization, not just of their electricity and their power supply grid. They've done power purchase agreements already successfully with Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Iran, and Tajikistan.
Do you think they'll have smart meters? I bet you they will.
All of those are going to be coming into what is in the future, we hope, going to be a very diversified electrical system that will have major components of it owned by private sector companies and private sector operating utilities under their new independent power production law that passed the government in the last year or so. Last issue is they have attempted, and I think President Ghani really deserves credit for this, they've attempted to regionalize a lot of the economic infrastructure that's going to support the longer-term private sector piece. That includes the Chabahar port deal, which gives Afghanistan, in an agreement with India and Iran, an actual port that they can ship product to go out to the Indian Ocean and beyond. They've started freight train connections with China that are working through the Kazakhs and the Uzbeks. The Salma Dam was inaugurated by India and Afghanistan recently, and the air corridor that Greg very notably talked about is a very exciting development because it's long overdue, and the Afghans need ways to get their private-grown products out to private markets abroad.
Okay, I know that was a long clip. But I think it's important because I don't think most people realize, and I certainly didn't myself to this degree, just how much development is actually going over there. We don't even hear about this stuff anywhere.
No, they don't want people in the United States to understand that the United States is building out the high-tech infrastructure. It's not just high-tech, but it's also everything that goes with it. You know, you got to have water, you got to have electric systems, you have to have all of these things.
Right.
And in my research, what I found is that the globalist bankers designed a system that is kind of like triangulation, mm-hmm. where, you know, European banks invest in the United States, Chinese banks invest here, but American banks invest over there, you know, in China and in Europe. And then the smaller banks invest in Africa. So that there is a triangulation effect, so that no one country really realizes, well, the banksters do, obviously, because they're the ones that are weaving this system together, this interconnected system of dependence,
mm-hmm.
that no single country can get out of it.
Exactly. Tell you what, we got a phone call on the line. Let's go ahead and take the call. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello. Hello, caller. All right, I thought we had a caller there, but I don't see them, hear them. So they're on the line. Maybe they went to do something. Anyway, let's continue on. We have also brain implants, changing moods, controlled by artificial intelligence. There's just so much going on with the surveillance state today. It's incredible. I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Since we started this a couple of weeks ago, I think we have another. I'm having a little problems here. Okay, here we go. Let's go ahead and do this. We got a fake news update, ladies and gentlemen.
Fake news, fake news. Fake news, fake news. Fake news, fake news. Fake news, fake news.
It hasn't been a good week for the media. Last Friday, ABC News reported that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, and I think we talked about this last week, he was prepared to testify that Trump, while still a candidate, directed him to contact the Russian officials. But later in the day, the network issued a quote-unquote clarification, and we talked about how, they called it that. This clarification that the direction came from when Trump was president-elect. And so was it really a situation where the, Trump, there was a violation of the law? And that changed the impact of the story, of course, entirely, as it's common for presidential transition teams to reach out to foreign governments. So you had that going on. But then there was also the Deutsche Bank subpoena. Reuters and Bloomberg reported on Tuesday of this week that special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation had subpoenaed the Deutsche Bank for information on accounts relating to President Trump and his family members, seemingly confirming that Mueller had expanded his probe to investigate the presidential's financial dealings. The Wall Street Journal diffused that bombshell in a follow-up report stating that the subpoenas actually dealt with peoples or entities close to Mr. Trump. So you had that. Then, just, what was it, yesterday? CNN reported that senior Trump campaign officials, including Trump himself, received an email from an unknown sender on September 4th, 2016, that linked them to what could have been unreleased WikiLeaks documents. Problem is, the actual email went out September 14th, one day after the WikiLeaks document dump. So they're trying to make it look like they had information prior to the WikiLeaks release, when in all actuality they were just notified after the release, a day afterward. So there's a lot of dirty tricks going on with the media. And the problem with all of this, and I think it's deliberate, is they're coming out and they're talking about all of this stuff. Oh, we've got breaking news. We've got new information about the collusion, new information about the corruption. And then, so they really build up the scandalous sounding things, and then they turn around and issue a quiet retraction. So yeah. What it does is it litters across the landscape all of this stuff. And bear in mind, folks, I've got no dog in the fight as far as defending Trump. I really don't care, other than the fact that I don't like what's being done here in terms of propagandistic purposes.
You know what? I Alex Jones did a segment last week. I don't know if it was Friday or Thursday, but he said that the Secret Service had contacted him about his reporting on threats to kill President Trump. Mm-hmm. And all of the various sources of, and these are supposedly mainstream sources, where they have threatened to kill President Trump. And so he's been contacted by the Secret Service about this. And so I have a question for you, Darren, Okay. Because you work in television, right?
Right.
Okay. Would it be possible for somebody to fabricate a fake report, but to have that report limited to a particular area, like Austin, Texas, because that's where InfoWars is in Austin, Texas. Could they fabricate
most
what
of
appears to be mainstream programs mm-hmm. where they say things like this, but it's only in Austin, Texas?
Well, no. I mean, not unless it's an Austin, Texas television affiliate. The problem is that now what you have, oh my gosh, we're already at the bottom of the hour already. What you normally have with network television is you have, typically they do regions, like NBC would have an East Coast feed. And then there was a West Coast feed as well. And sometimes, like I've seen Tom Brokaw back when I was at the NBC affiliate, he really made a huge screw-up. And he actually put his hands in his face. I just laughed my head off when I saw it. And I watched the West Coast feed, and they had edited it out. So
it is possible.
Well, it's possible for regions. East and West, and maybe some in between. I don't know what all the networks are doing, but a lot of the networks have an East Coast feed and a West Coast feed because a lot can develop in 3 hours with the time difference. Hey, hang on. We got to take the bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
In a recent closed-door speech to donors, politicians, and media, Bill Clinton spoke about American gun owners. Quote, "A lot of these people, all they've got is their hunting and their fishing, or they've been listening to this stuff for so long that they believe it all," unquote. And we all remember Barack Obama's 2008 comments to a room of San Francisco elites. Quote, "It's not surprising then they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion," unquote. The arrogance of their superiority requires this reminder. They don't rule us. They don't give us rights. We grant them power. They don't make us safe. We pay to protect them. They don't make us free. We're free already. And as long as we have the Second Amendment, we always will be. We are America. And our politicians are only as powerful as we, the people, allow them to be.
With Government America News this hour, I'm Darren Weeks. Defense lawyers in the Bunkerville standoff case were stunned last month to receive recorded phone calls between co-defendant Blaine Cooper and his Oregon defense lawyer from federal prosecutors who had previously denied possessing any attorney-client privileged jailhouse calls. Prosecutors shared 12 jail calls between Cooper and Portland lawyer Krista Shipsey with defense lawyers for co-defendants Cliven Bundy, his two sons, and Ryan Payne, who are now on trial in federal court in Las Vegas. Assistant federal public defenders Brenda Wexler and Ryan Norwood, who represent Payne in Nevada, have called for a dismissal of the case, alleging that the prosecution has acted with flagrant misconduct. New York City continues to claim the title of America's abortion capital. The Centers for Disease Control's latest abortion surveillance report reveals that one in three babies is aborted in the five boroughs of New York City. According to the CDC, 47 states and the District of Columbia reported a total of 652,639 abortions for 2014, with New York City accounting for an astounding 67,620 of those preborn deaths. That means 35 abortions for every 1,000 women of reproductive age and the highest abortion ratio, 575 abortions for every 1,000 live births. The Environmental Protection Agency disclosed on Monday that U.S. farmers will spend an estimated $14.9 million a year reporting to federal emergency managers that livestock are releasing gas. The EPA included the figures in a notice published Tuesday in the Federal Register. The new rule comes after a decade-long battle between the EPA and environmental groups over the scope of the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, commonly known as the Superfund Law. The law passed in 1980 gives federal emergency managers authority to respond to releases of hazardous substances. That's news.
One of the most popular movies during the Christmas season is the old favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the story of George Bailey, a compassionate but dejected businessman who is ready to give up on life when his guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes. Clarence shows him life as if George had never been born, and George discovers that for all his supposed mistakes and failures, he has brought joy and life to countless people. It really is a wonderful life, and not just on TV. Each and every person has so much potential for good, and nowhere is this potential greater than with an unborn child. This Christmas, and always, please work to preserve the wonder of life for the unborn and their mothers. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org. That's nrlc.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you. Vicki, do you have anything else we want to say regarding the fake news update that we did just a moment ago?
No, we can maybe talk about the... I'm very curious about the transmission of programming.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I forget. Sorry, I got distracted on what we were talking about. Yeah, so anyway, there's a East Coast feed for most networks, at least the ones I've had experience with, and I've worked with NBC affiliates, and I've worked with the CBS affiliate, and I also worked with the PBS affiliate. And so those three networks I know have two different feeds, one for the East Coast, one for the West Coast, and I think that's generally the model.
Okay, so there must be a central hub that receives the transmission and then distributes it to the local affiliates? Is that the way it works?
No, I think it goes straight. There's multiple satellite channels and transponders or places, you know, streams within a transponder that go up to the satellite from the network operations center, which would be the satellite master control. And then it comes down, it's pulled down by the different affiliates. Depending upon which time zone they're in, you know, if they're in the, what, if they're taking the Western feed, they would be pulling it down, the Western one. And if they're taking the, if they're on the east side of the country, they would be taking the Eastern one. But they pull it down on, you know, locally from the satellite. And even that is probably going to be phased out eventually because the Internet really has kind of come of age in certain respects for transmitting things. But satellite is very much still used for live television events because it's more dependable than the Internet, as we found here. By the way, we will fix these problems. So to those who are commenting about, you know, the issues we've had today, it's been especially bad today. But it's gotten a little better now. But if we have to fall back on the phone, we will take care of this some way. So just stick with us here. But anyway, I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out if how is it possible that the Secret Service was not aware that there were Trump threats against Trump's life when Alex Jones is hearing them all over the place.
Well,
you know, he's in Austin, and I wondered if there was a way to infeed specialized programming to an area.
Well, I'm surprised that this has become an issue now because, honestly, there have been threats all over the Internet, some very high-profile threats on social media and everywhere. And, honestly, I don't know how the Secret Service can keep up. I mean, this guy, Trump, is probably the most hated president in the history of the United States. I mean...
Well, at least that's what our perception is.
Well, I don't think it's just perception. Now, there are some people who rabidly support him, too, and I'm neither. I don't hate him, nor do I love him. I'm completely neutral on the subject. I just want the best for our country, and I don't see anybody really fighting for that. But as far as Trump is concerned, and any death threats on him, they're all over the place. So I think the Secret Service could pretty much cherry-pick a threat and go after it because, and then that's probably what they do is assess the situation and see the ones that appear to be more credible and investigate those. But as I look at the Secret Service, I think they've got pretty much an impossible task at trying to head these things off at the pass. I would not want to be involved.
Well, that could be. You know, same with the FBI. They are just inundated with data. But, you know, how do you pick through what is important data?
Yeah, especially when you've got, you know, the fish rotting from the head.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, anyway, after a discussion, we were talking about the whole hearing that took place on Capitol Hill a couple of weeks ago regarding the... Subcommittee hearing on information technology, which dealt with the subject of political advertisements. I wanted to get back to that if we could. This, of course, grew out of the whole Russian hacking meme, which is something I'm really sick of about. I hate to even talk about it, but they're talking about it, folks, so that's why we have to talk about it. They first started telling us about the Russians hacked the elections. You know, I won't go into the whole... It's all BS. There's no proof, but now we've graduated from the Russians hacking the elections to the Russians hacking our minds through political advertisements. And as we told you previously, this is a dangerous area. It amounts to the government debating the merits or demerits of regulating free speech in various forms. As we discussed previously, we're living in a day when you can pay social media platforms to take an ordinary post and elevate it so that hundreds, thousands, or maybe even millions of people can see it. So when we're talking about regulating advertising, as they have been in Congress, it raises the question, what is a political ad? And it isn't a stretch, I don't think, to suggest that it would be very easy to go from regulating ads to regulating all political speech. And this is the thing that we have to guard against. After having a discussion about fake news in this congressional hearing, where David Shavern of the News Media Alliance, who represents 2,000 newspapers, and seems to only want their establishment narrative to be allowed to be heard, Representative Paul Mitchell, he then turned his attention to Ian Vandewalker, Ian Vandewalker is with the Brennan Center for Justice. He's working with Democrats, joined by traitor John McCain, to pass the Honest Ads Act, which would, among other things, require online publications with more than 50 million unique users to disclose sources of funding for any political advertising. So I want to jump into the hearing at this point.
Mr. Vandewalker, I mean, can you help me understand then, given your perspective on it, we're going to allow the federal government to determine what is appropriate appropriate content in social media? We're going to have them determine, well, that's a political ad, that's not. We're going to leave it up to a group of people to decide that?
Sorry. The idea is to incorporate an existing framework that always already is out there. The electioneering communications is a bright line test. Candidate mentions within a certain time period above a certain spending threshold.
Well, let me stop you, though. Clearly, the bright line hasn't worked. As Mr. Rothenberg notes and Mr. Dickerson noted, the reality is an awful lot of these posts that are now questioned as influencing the election fell outside, well outside the bright line. So who's going to determine that?
Well, again, the bright line keeps you from having someone have to determine it. Certainly, there are things outside of the bright line, having a bright line and having people understand that they can post if it's below a spending threshold protects speech and protects the ability of people to talk about legislative issues without having a decision maker have to make judgment calls every time.
Well, let me suggest to the group, and I've suggested internally here to other members, our first responsibility here is to protect the Constitution. The First Amendment is the First Amendment for a reason. We need to defend that, even if some people think it's fake news, because one person's opinion on fake news is another person's opinion. And the idea that we're going to allow a group of regulators, a group of bureaucrats to regulate what we'll be able to see in terms of social media or other formats offends me, and I will certainly oppose that in any way I can.
Now, Randall Rothenberg is with the Interactive Advertising Bureau, and he seems to be advocating for more congressional support for industry self-regulation, but he also does a good job of outlining part of the problem here. And this is where it really does get to the real issue.
Since its passage in 1971, the Federal Election Campaign Act has mandated disclaimers on all political advertising that expressly advocates the election or defeat of a candidate. But much of the fake news and fake ads at the center of the current storm did not engage in such overt candidate support. There were not a bunch of secretive Russian moles purchasing vote for Trump or Hillary for president internet banner ads. Rather, there were sophisticated posts about social and political issues, some of which were made more widely available because the operators paid to amplify them in people's social media feeds. Some of the scandalous messaging was not even placed for payment. Both social influence advertising and unpaid advocacy fall outside the scope of federal campaign disclosure rules. Americans have First Amendment rights to shout on street corners, put signs on their lawns, and post on social media without registering as political committees or reporting how much they spend on megaphones or smartphones.
What do you think so far, Vicki?
I think it's quite a dilemma for them. You know, having ordinary people out here, of which I consider myself one, expressing political opinion. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle is what they're trying to do here. They've created a can of worms, which has been opened up when the internet was brought to the people and brought to them not for their benefit, of course, but brought to them for their own entanglement. But our side has been able to effectively use this wild, wild west that is the World Wide Web to expose them and to be anything that they try to pull, we're all over it. And, of course, we've talked a lot about the false flag operations and the various things that they're trying to do regarding, manipulating population through the Hegelian dialectic. But now they can't deal with it. They've got to figure out some way. And then this claim that foreign governments are using the internet to manipulate the minds of the people. Well, you know what? Caveat lecter and caveat emptor. You know, let's let the people decide what they're going to believe and what they're not going to believe. Why does it got to be so, why do we have to worry about, well, the Russians may be propagandizing us? Well, you know what? They may be. And you know what? They're fools if they're not. but so is the U.S. Yeah. government. I mean, let's not forget the Smith-Mundt Act being repealed.
Well, and let's not forget that USAID is handing out smartphones all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, so people can not only get their news, but they can jump into the fray also. See, the dilemma, I think, is with global governance, who is going to control the internet and under what philosophy?
Mm-hmm.
And how are they going to control that? But another problem is that they were marketed the idea that everybody could jump on the internet and make a living. Okay, so if they shut down this advertising, and there are, you know, a lot of people, I'm sure, that are making a good living on the internet somehow.
Right.
And so they kind of, if they shut down political speech, they're having to also shut down the audience, the customer base for the people that are trying to make a living on the internet. So it's an incredible dilemma.
Yeah, they've created a big problem for themselves. And but you got to ask the question regarding this context: what is an ad? And if online advertising is fair game, how quickly do we slide down that slippery slope of regulating general speech? And I think that's could be where we're headed. You know, obviously, I think that's the goal. Now, here's a Representative Blake Ferrant hold.
There's a difference in the way that ads are placed. There's been a lot about, you know, who's buying these ads and the disclosures. Typically in a newspaper, you actually probably talk to a salesman or you talk to somebody on the phone. If you're going to buy something on an online platform, it's typically done online. Now, let's say I'm Boris or Natasha from Moscow and have a pile of rubles I've converted into American dollars. I go buy a cash card, Visa, rent a post office box, and ain't nobody going to know I'm a foreign national. Do you see that as a problem? Yes, Mr. Yeah.
Well, as I said in my testimony, and it's not necessarily a popular point of view across my entire industry, every company should know to some degree of comfort and certainty who it's doing business with. That's a fundamental principle, whether you're making a car or whether you're running a grocery store. So I think that it is not just possible, but necessary to have some kind of supplier qualification and customer qualification safeguards in place.
All right, so now let's go to the other problem that people are complaining about in social media. I think there's, you may actually have more effect in elections on, say, Twitter or maybe Facebook with bots. Just posting something at no cost. I'm a bad actor, may go spend $100,000 hiring a programmer to create bots and start posting stuff. That's is there a technological way to detect that? I understand that's a problem in the industry worldwide dealing with bots. What do you do about that, and how do you not get legitimate people who are trying to exercise their First Amendment rights wrapped up in that?
Sir, you have just identified the absolute total nut of the problem, the dilemma, but it's not unsolvable. I don't think you can come up with anything that will ever be 100% foolproof, because the technology is very low barrier to entry and will always evolve. It's like a game of whack-a-mole. They're always going to find new ways to do things, but I keep coming back. I'm sorry I sound like a broken record. Nobody actually knows what a record is these days, but I'm sorry I keep repeating myself, but I think elements of supplier qualification, knowing with whom you're doing business up and down the supply chain, and building that into a comprehensive self-regulatory program will go. So and we have proof that it goes a long way to reducing the incidence of bot traffic.
Now, I wouldn't solve the bot traffic problem, but I could see Congress mandating everyone have a license to use the internet, and only those with a valid internet license could advertise or post on a given platform during election seasons, and if you have the wrong opinion or support the wrong candidates, guess what happens to your license?
But then you're licensing free speech. I don't think you can do that.
Well, they would argue that they're not licensing. You're still free to speak. You just can't. They do the same thing with guns. I mean, well, they make the case for guns. I mean, so you're licensing the Second Amendment. I'm not saying I approve of it. I'm just saying I could see them doing it.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the internet, though, is that, okay, like when I write something, I post it on Facebook, I send it out on email. For everybody that I send it to in an email, they forward it, and sometimes it ends up on other websites that I don't even know anything about. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you handle that?
Well, and the other problem is, how would you handle foreign actors and people that operate outside the scope of U.S. law? Because anybody who is really engaging in nefarious activity isn't going to follow law. So what it would do, though, is it would apply to social media organizations and websites who have a presence in the United States. And that's really the only way that they could do this, is to go after websites, go after the platforms. And if they don't enforce the comments, whether it be news articles with comments, whether it be social media platforms with comments, or tweets, whatever the case may be, if they don't have an effective enforcement mechanism, they could be fined.
Enforcement of what, though? That's the problem. If I post something that is an opinion about somebody that's running for office,
mm-hmm.
Who's to tell me that I can't post that, because I'm not getting paid?
Right.
It's my opinion, and I'm entitled to it.
Right, exactly, and that is exactly the problem.
And if somebody deletes my post, then they've censored my free speech. They've violated my rights to free speech if they allow posting to all comers, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So
yeah, it's a dilemma. It's real.
It'll be fun to see it play out. Although I'm not, whatever comes out of the other end of this, and this is really the thing. I think hopefully the listeners know why I wanted to come back to this. This is too important to just let it slide. Because whatever comes out of the other side of this hearing, or these series of congressional hearings, this whole narrative, I think is going to be a very much more tightly controlled internet, as far as what you can do, as far as what you can say, and as far as who's controlling the levers and switches.
Well, especially as they move farther along into the socialist global governing system that is at odds with everything that is an American value, they will need to clamp down on opinion.
Yeah.
And that reminds me, I was listening to a panel discussion with, I think it was Senator Burr, B-U-R-R, and he said this whole Russian hacking thing, Russian interference in our election, was a failure of imagination.
Failure.
Now, where did you hear that before?
Failure of imagination?
Uh-huh. 9/11. That's exactly what the government officials said about 9/11. It was a failure. Condoleezza Rice said, "Who would have ever thought of anybody flying an airplane into a building?" It was a failure of imagination.
How about the people that built the building and built it to withstand just such an event?
Don't confuse people with the details.
Yeah. It's kind of like this.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a real good story.
There you go.
That's good. I like that.
So anyway, we turn our attention to Alan Dickerson now of the Center for Competitive Politics, who seemed to be more concerned than any of those others about the constitutionality of the proposals. Imagine that, the constitutionality of it. He suggested that the proposals might be the solution as it targets the foreigners and leaves Americans alone. I would insert, is that even possible?
I'm pleased to finally hear the Foreign Agent Registration Act raised.
because it basically is a political file. I mean, this is a law that requires, you know, essentially any, and it's a very broad definition of political public communication, at very low dollar thresholds to be filed with the Department of Justice, to have physical copies of the ad filed with the department, to have a disclaimer on the front of the ad saying it's being paid for by a foreign government. I mean, I think a lot of the tragedy of this conversation is that in our efforts to get at Russian activity, we're ignoring the tool that is directed at foreign actors and instead trying to expand laws that by definition impact American political speech. You know, and given the scope of the existing FARA and the fact that it could be expanded if it was this committee's interest to not only foreign agents but also foreign principals, that strikes me as a much narrower, much more constitutionally defensible way of building the political file that's being discussed here, precisely because it's targeted at foreigners and not Americans.
So right now, your understanding of FARA is that it's for agents of the government. It doesn't include principals of the government.
That's my understanding.
So that's a possible way that they'll try to take out of this, getting actors to register under the Foreign Agents Registration Act.
Again, I don't know how you define that, because I suppose in some ways you could say that I'm an agent of the American government. I'm trying to find it. You know, so I
trying to find
everything that I post is oriented towards the
restoration of the Republic.
Restoration of the Republic. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I sort of am
trying
an agent
find
for our government.
Yeah. Well, the real government, and that is the people.
Right.
That's the bottom line. We're the government, at least under the constitutional system of government that we're supposed to have.
Yeah, and my mission is to expose the criminality of whoever it is in the Washington, in the East Coast corridor that is running our country.
Exactly. Well, there's more to cover, but we're just about out of time, Vicki. It's incredible how fast the time goes. It just flies by.
3 hours.
Yep, time flies whether or not you're having fun, as Derry Brownfield used to say. So we'll look at the for the Roy Moore trial. Roy Moore, that's, he is about it too. He's about on trial. We'll look at the election for this Tuesday and see if Larry Nichols' theories play out.
It'll be interesting. Next week has got to be an interesting week.
Yeah,
with all that's going on.
I haven't seen a week yet that isn't. Be perfectly honest with you.
Well, fortunately, we have limited attention spans, right? So we don't have to keep all of these interesting things in our mind all at once.
Well, everything that's happening promotes limited attention spans, because you just about can't focus on one thing before you're being slapped in the face, assaulted, really, by another major event that comes along right on the heels, and sometimes, many times, multiple ones stacked up together. And yeah. I think it's all a part of a strategy of overloading the sensors, you know, making it to the point where people can't focus on these things, because you can't thoroughly investigate something if you're constantly having other things bite you in the hind end.
That's for sure.
So anyway, hey, thanks for hanging with us, folks. As I said, we'll work on the audio problems, and one way or the other, hopefully we'll have a fix next week. I'm committed to it. We're going to try some things this week, and if they work, great. If not, then we'll fall back to the old-fashioned phone line if we have to. God bless you, folks. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.